Oh, here we go. Is that for you? Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we'll start council in approximately 2 minutes. Thank you. Meeting to order at 6:04 p.m. Before we get into speaker's business, I'd like to give the floor to President Kinda for a quick address.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I just wanted to say a few words today. We just learned, as most of you are aware, that our friend and our colleague passed away today. This is a student who I've known for just a couple years, but one who had grown so much. He was a beloved member of the student governance circle so many of us are privileged to be a part of, and I know that we are all honored to be a part of his life. What he must have been going through, we can never know, but my heart hurts to know of his hurt. No student should have to suffer at a place of learning, and this is a reminder for us to look to each other when times get tough. We are diminished by the loss of any student, any member of this community. I urge us all to continue to take care of each other. Thank you for being here and for listening. And now, may you please have a moment of silence.
Thank you very much, President Kinda, for that address. Anywho, let's continue on. Before we get into speaker's business, I'm actually just going to postpone speaker's business until after our first presentation, presentation item 2A, athletics and recreation fee, presented by Ian Reed and Cheryl Harwart.
Perfect.
Sponsored by Vice President Kwan. Is there a seconder to sponsor this presentation? Vice President Bondarchuk. Is there anyone who is opposed to viewing this presentation? Seeing none.
Well, thank you, Sadiq, and thanks for having us here to do this presentation today. Can you be my slide change guy?
Absolutely, I can.
Okay. We'll do a test in a minute, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
So thank you very much for supporting athletics and recreation over the years, and especially last year when we came to Student Council asking for an athletics and recreation fee increase, which ultimately was supported by the students and in all the various governing bodies of the university, and ultimately ended up in what I think was a reasonable increase to the athletics and recreation fee. Part of that discussion was to essentially adhere to several principles that the students find very close to them in terms of when you're dealing with university administration and fees. So if you just give me that there, that's perfect, you got it. Okay, so what we're trying to live within here are these five basic principles within the fees. Transparency, which is something the students have always told us is a major request and requirement for fees, tuition and fees. Accountability, partnership, and partnership is an important principle for us, and I think it should also be an important principle for the students and the students' union as well. And collaboration and consultation, which is a big part of what we're doing today, just to let you know and increase the communication around what we do with the fees. So the first one, transparency. So the students pay in total about $5.5 million in athletics and recreation fees. These numbers are rounded off not to the penny, as you can see. But basically transparency, when I ask the students what does transparency mean, well, it can mean a lot of different things when you use the word. To me, we're using the word to mean what are the students paying for? What can the students expect out of this fee? How direct is the link between the fee you pay and the service you get? That's really what we're trying to show you here. So the athletics and recreation fees pay part of the cost for non-tenured academic and non-academic staff to provide sport and recreation services to students. So the fee pays for staff to provide service to you, essentially. And the fee cannot pay for the cost of staff to teach academic courses. So this fee is totally for providing service and not for providing teaching. Okay, so that was an agreement reached between the students and the university in the early 90s. So there should be no part of this fee that does that. Our coaches actually do teach academic courses, and our budget is reimbursed by the university's operating budget to offset that teaching contribution. Okay, next. So the second one is accountability, which is our definition of it is who is responsible for the allocation of the funds and therefore the provision of services. The responsibility lies directly with one individual in this case, the Dean of the Faculty of Physical Education and Recreation. So it's very easy to determine where the accountability lies with this fee. And the Dean in this case delegates that responsibility to two directors, myself, the Director of Athletics, and Cheryl Harwart, who's the Director of Campus and Community Recreation. So essentially, the two people that have been delegated the responsibility of looking after this fee, administering this fee, are here today to explain it to you. So here are the partners, and this is one of the most important things that we tried to get across to the students when we were discussing the fees last year. The actual fees paid by and I'm talking here now specific to the athletics portion of the fee. And Cheryl will speak to the other aspects of the faculty that receive part of the fees. But just to show you that in very, very broad general numbers, where the other sources of revenue come from to provide the services that we provide to the students. So we actually spend in the neighborhood of $8 million just in the athletics budget. Okay, so that's not including Cheryl's budget. So this is just the athletics budget is about $8 million. The fee component of that is around $3.2 million. So out of that $5.5 million that comes in athletics, it's about $3.2 million. And you can see we raise about $4.8 million in my unique math way. I'm working from the bottom up here because I think that's really the accepted counting principles. And so out of the $4.8 million, you can see, generally speaking, where the other sources of revenue come from to support the program. So you can see that we do not rely solely on the athletics and recreation fee to provide the services that we provide, and I am quite sure, generate more non-fee revenue than any university in Canada to support our programs. And it is a big testament to, first of all, having a diverse revenue base, so there are lots of different sources of revenue that come in. We don't rely very, very heavily on any one of the other sources. We rely very heavily, of course, on the athletics and recreation fee of the students, because it's the one source of revenue that we have that does not fluctuate greatly from year to year. Okay, so the breakdown of where do we spend this money? So you saw where the money came in. The money, generally speaking, out of that $8 million, about $4.4 million of it is paid out in salaries of various kinds. So there are coaching salaries in there, which are CAS, so that's contract academic sessional temporary. A lot of your profs are actually in that same category. It's a kind of unique category at the University of Alberta of non-tenured academic staff. Also non-academic staff, which are represented by NASA. And in there are also the hundreds of students that work for us at our events, that work in campus recreation and or recreation services, sorry, and that work in within the facilities, etc. So all of those things are rolled into that $4.4 million. Travel, including all of our national championship travel for all of our teams, is about $1.9 million. Supplies, about $1.4 million. And we pay about $300,000 in rent. The student scholarships underneath that, I provide that number so that you can see in a general number about how much money we raise to pay the tuition, to subsidize tuition for our student athletes. Every cent of that is raised by the university, by our staff, through alumni and donors. So not one cent of it. Well, I couldn't say not one cent. I could be lying about that. There could be one cent. But a very small amount would ever come out of the operating budget, and only in a case where there had to be some top-up somewhere. But most of that money, so 99% of it, would come from money raised through our various fundraising sources. And I think that's just important so that you can see there are a lot of dollars that go back into the pockets of students through this operation. So the next one. The principle of collaboration and consultations, we agreed to provide a twice-a-year report to student council, Students Union, and the Grad Students Association. So we will do that. We will give you the option of having us come in the second time. If you want us to come in, you may, after today's presentation, decide you don't want to see us anymore, and that's possible. I wouldn't blame you for that, but we will be available if you are interested. And we also have it is a newly constituted committee called the Athletics and Recreation Fees Policy Advisory Committee, which has representation from the Students' Union, two people from the Students' Union, two people from the Grad Students' Association. The two directors, the dean and the dean of students, are on that committee, and we review how the fee is spent, what kind of services are provided, and policies related to that fee. Just so council is aware, there is almost no written policy associated with the actual fee. So when we meet to discuss what the fee should pay for, it's not. There is no document we can go back to that has been officially adopted by the university that says this fee pays for these things and it shouldn't pay for those things. So most of what we do here is actually a function of a traditional sort of unwritten agreement between us and the students. And we would like to get some of that into a little bit more formalized writing if possible, because we think that protects both parties from future decisions, future good or future bad decisions, because you don't have to be protected from good decisions generally. Okay, so somebody asked the question about student attendance. This is a terribly done slide. It's okay if you're standing where I am. If you are where you are, you can't see it, so I'll just make it up. But the idea here was to show you what student attendance was like. The first asterisk below just explains that we use these scanners now, so students come in and they scan their cards. The scanners haven't been working at the football games quite that well, so we've just been using the just student card for admission. And this is no non-conference events, and we have probably nearly the same number of non-conference events as we do conference events. And we do provide free access to the students for most of our non-conference events as well. There's a few non-conference events that we do charge for, and we charge for playoff games. So freebies, roughly, there were 6,389 students that took advantage of the free admission to varsity games, and 1,484 paid to go to playoffs. Obviously, there's very few playoff games compared to conference games. And I only put that quote in at the bottom because we did have a discussion at the Athletics and Recreation Fees Policy Committee around getting more data from the one card so that we could actually tell what faculties the students were coming from, what year, so do more first years come or do more fourth years come. We would love to be able to do that. It looks to me, based on that quote, that it is possible to do, but there needs to be some coordination between us and the one card office and the registrar's office. And sometimes when you're talking with the university, then coordination is not necessarily what we do best. So we would like to be able to do that in the future so we can come back here and give you a report that would actually break down where the students come from, what faculties, what years, etc., how many grad students. The grad students are very interested in how many grad students attend events, etc. So we would love to be able to do that too. And Cheryl, I know, is very interested in that in terms of the access to recreation programs and the access to the fitness center, getting a little better, richer data around that. So I think that might be the end of me.
That is the end of you.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Jump down.
Okay, I'm out of here.
Thank goodness for that. Holy, nothing in already. So first thing I'll talk about a little bit here is campus and community recreation. So some of you might remember we used to have three units within the faculty. One was athletics, which Ian is in charge of. One was recreation services, and one was operations. Over the course of this past summer, we made a decision within the faculty to combine those other two units, recreation services and operations. Part of that is just an efficiency of use of people. So we had some programmers, recreation programmers in operations, and we also have programmers in recreation services. So rather than having duplication of services, we agreed that it makes sense to use those more efficiently. And our goal here actually is to expand our programming opportunities with those people, not necessarily to cut a bunch of positions, but to ensure that there's more services available for students and staff. So a little bit about this slide. As Ian's identified for athletics, this is the breakdown for the new campus and community recreation. Facility staff wages, so these are the people you might have seen last year if you remember that presentation all. They were under the operations section. These are people who might maintain ice, or they might be fitness center employees, or they are people who work out in the locker rooms, things like that. Programming staff wages, primarily this is people who were working in the old recreation services, so they're people who would organize intramurals, club sports, special events for students and staff, things like that. And then our broad operating costs, which I didn't bother to break down into things like repair and maintenance or materials or promotions, but our broad operating costs are $2.1 million. We also have a fund that I think you'll be aware of, the Campus Recreation Enhancement Fund. That makes up $250,000. Those are funds that are given back to student groups to enhance the overall benefit of recreation services for the students. And these are often given to clubs. They might be given to a facility enhancement. They might be given for equipment, things like that enhance the experience of students. On the revenue side of campus and community recreation, then the athletic and recreation fee makes up $2.1 million of that $5.3 million that we expend. U of A operating, so the university itself, provides us with a contribution of $1.7 million. And also, in addition to the $1.7 million, the broader university budgets pay for things like cleaning, repair and maintenance on facilities, primarily around the envelope of the building. So I mean the roofs and the mechanical systems, things like that. The faculty, and that $5.3 million pays for things like floor refinishing or lines on the floor or replacement of flooring in the Butter Dome, for example. And then, like Ian, in athletics, they raise a fair amount of money outside of these two sources that we just talked about. In this case, it's $1.3 million. Often that's coming from things like rentals of facilities. And so if you think about the Butter Dome craft sale just before exams in the fall, there's a fee to renting that facility for that group. That's where that kind of money comes from. What is the service? What are the services that are provided? So we provide access to students to the variety of facilities we have here on North Campus. So the arena, climbing center, fitness center, all the gym studios, activity spaces, pavilion, squash courts, the swimming pools, all of those are included in your access fee. And then what kind of services are provided? Well, I hope many of you are involved in some of the services that are provided through campus and community recreation, club sports, new program this past year called Live Well. We were able to fund that, and that takes recreation and activity out to the student body. So we were in libraries this last year, we were over at the business building, we were over at Hub Mall, we were at a variety of places that take activity, physical wellness, right to the students as opposed to having them have to come to Van Vliet complex. Intramural programs are part of our services, group exercise programs, instructional, special events, outdoor recreation, Orchesis, which is a dance program, and a residence hall programs are also included. I just thought I'd give you a couple of key stats for your information. So with all of our programming here on main campus, almost 27,000 registrants are involved in campus and community programming. So that's a pretty big number for sure. The largest increases year over year were in the areas of group exercise and club sports. We haven't really analyzed why that is. My speculation, because we got some new facilities. You're all standing in that PAW Center. It's a beautiful collaboration between students and the faculty as well. And we got a little bit of extra space, so we were able to offer some more programming there. And of course, the new program of LiveWell that I spoke a little bit about earlier. Interesting stats in terms of use of some of the key facilities in the PAW Center. So Fitness Center, just last year, sort of winter term, we had 105 uses in the Fitness Center. This year in winter term, we were 105,000, I should say, versus 160,000. Really significant increase. It's busy there. If any of you go, it's busy. And it's fun to watch because people now get an opportunity to use all sorts of different equipment, and they've got a big smile on their face generally, so it's pretty good that way. Climbing Center, again, January to March last year, 2014, approximately 6,000 uses in that time period. January, March 15, 11,000 uses. Again, a really significant increase, and if any of you use that facility, it's a spectacular facility. It's become really very much an icon here on campus. We're getting lots and lots of interest from campuses across Canada about this facility. It's back to you, my man.
No, really. I just wanted to show that you can watch the Golden Bears and Pandas on CanadaWest.tv now when they're on the road. So you can come to the game.
Do you have to watch games?
Yep.
So you might as well go travel, go on a road trip.
Well, it's a good question. Because
last year, U of A was the only school that you had to pay to watch games online.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I'm the president of Canada West, so this is a question that I particularly like. And I was asked this by a student. I was asked this by a student in a marketing class in the spring, and they said, "Well, you know, why can we get into the games free, but I got to pay to watch them on TV?" And I said, "Well, it's because we want you to go to the game. We don't want you to stay home. So if you come to the game, And then when it's on the road, of course, it's because we want you to become a fan and help generate some revenue that way. But seriously, the story behind that is that when Canada West has been doing webcasts in basketball across the conference for about 6 years, I'm going to say. When I became the president, I asked the question, why don't we monetize this? We should be making some money off it. It costs somewhere in the neighborhood of $500 to $600 a game, at least, to webcast a game. Just the staff, two or three camera operators, a switcher, an announcer, a color commentator. So anyway, I wanted to do that, and the other schools in Canada West didn't want to do it because they thought fewer people would watch. And I said, well, that might be, but at least the ones that do watch will know that they care because they'll have paid for it. The conference didn't want to do it, so I volunteered to do it just as U of A, as a pilot project, to see what would happen. Would people call and swear at us? Would they email us? Would they complain? So we did it all last year. We had two complaints. Two people emailed and said, why are you paying? We got it for free last year. And I said, because it costs money to operate this, and we can't continue to subsidize it with other sources of revenue, so the users should pay. And they, oh, that makes complete sense, because I guess they just thought maybe these things were coming out of the stratosphere for free somehow. So then this year, I went back and said I wanted everybody to charge. And in the first meeting, 5 out of 17 schools voted in favor. In the second meeting, we had 13 that voted in favor. And in the last meeting, it was unanimous. And we came up with a pricing model, and so we're now charging across the board. We do have, there's technical glitches in it once in a while, but we budgeted $7,500 in revenue at Canada West for the whole year for webcasts, and we're, as of the middle of October, we've already hit nearly $30,000. So if we can continue to generate these kinds of dollars over a period of years, and we can build it and grow it, it will definitely help to offset the costs for all of the schools to participate in university sports. And, you know, people say, well, it's already the parents that are already charging. And I say, well, yeah, but they can't follow their kid around everywhere, so why shouldn't we get an extra $30 out of them for watching for the year? So anyway, that's the story behind it. And it's, you know, it is one of those things where we have to start to learn better ways to generate revenue to offset the costs of these things. And it's an expensive conference to play in, so... That's more information than you probably wanted. Yes?
Sorry, I may have missed something, but have you guys tracked viewership in terms of this year and previous years where it's been great?
Yeah, we've tracked it. The interesting thing was that in the first year, the numbers for us went way down because we were charging. And I said, well, have you really checked into that? And of course, the numbers would go down. What happened was, of course, that we actually are able to track login time. So we track login time. In the first year of free, people were logging in on an average of 2.5 minutes a night. So what were they doing? They were checking the scores. That's all they were doing. They didn't want to watch the game. And when we started to charge, the average login time was 28 minutes. So while our numbers went down, our viewing time went way up. And if you know, when you're broadcasting something, what you want is viewing time. There's no point in putting an event on and having somebody watch it for 2 minutes. You're not going to create a fan like that. So we do have those stats. We have stats by sport. So we have numbers. We have connection time. We don't have a real rich data set of exactly where the people are coming from and who they are when they log in, whether they're students or families or what they are. We don't really have that because the back end of the system isn't that powerful. But we do have at least a data set where we can communicate with the people who paid now, so we can at least do that. But we don't have a lot of demographics on them. Yep.
As far as the soliciting the information from the registrar's office at OneCard when for attendees to the sporting events, what benefits do you see of getting such information? Like, would it be for targeted information or marketing for following games? And what safeguards would there be in place for students who might find that invasive and would rather their information not be collected?
Well, I don't think we would want to collect the names of the people. We're strictly looking at demographics. And I would say when we're trying to target certain faculties, if we see our advertising or our message isn't getting out to engineering or isn't getting out to arts or isn't getting out to science, we might be able to do a better job of communicating more directly with faculties. And as well, you know, we constantly would like to see more first years getting involved right away in all of our programming so that we start to get them into the university lifestyle early on. So we'd like to be able to track whether our first year numbers are strong and whether we're starting to grow on our first year numbers relative to our fourth year numbers. But for the most part, we wouldn't want a lot more detail than that. That's really all we're looking for. So that's why we would use it. I think it would be I did a study in 1994 where we actually hand collected student numbers for about 6 weeks, and then we had somebody actually punch them all into an Excel spreadsheet, walk them over to the registrar's office, they ran the numbers, and it was actually a really interesting research project to see what the ratio was, because at that time the ratio of students coming to the games was almost identical to the ratio of students in the faculties on campus, so it was an actual cross-section of the campus and not just all phys ed students, for example. So that was a really good little study that we tried, but we would love to be able to get better data on that.
Yeah, I think I'd just build on what Ian was just saying, that there's a misconception that only phys ed students really care about physical activity, and we want to dispel that, yes, because it's a service that's provided by the faculty, but it's campus-wide. And so that's one of the things we want to try to get at.
So just more of a comment and then a question, actually. So first, I wanted to say it's not often that we get really, really good examples of in consultation, and no one's 100%, but the process with the athletics and rec fee has been pretty great so far. So thanks for the presentation. And my question is pretty general. Just what are some challenges and or opportunities coming up this year that you think you're going to face?
Well, I have a great challenge.
Sure.
The great challenge I have is trying to figure out how to pack more people into the fitness center. Because it's fantastic. It's, I mentioned the stats, but it just continues to grow and grow and grow in use of it. And it's a huge challenge because we want to offer that type of service to all of our student body. But the busier it gets, the harder it is for people to go and to people to want to go. So our challenge is trying to find different ways to provide that service that really makes it a good experience still. I think the other challenge that I would see coming up this year, one that we in Campus Community Recreation are taking on, is more inclusivity. So we've got a lot of discussion at the university level about how we're more inclusive. And I think we in the faculty want to make sure that our facilities are inclusive and that the people feel welcome. So that we've chatted about this at another event, but that all people feel welcome. So I think that's one of the challenges that I see that I'm looking forward to facing this year.
Yeah, and I would say two or three things. One is we've always liked to be more relevant to students, get more students out to games, just because it's a great place to go for a social experience, even if you didn't watch the game. I mean, it's kind of good just to come out and meet other students, and we'd like to see more of that. We have a challenge with the freeze and the fees. Freeze the amount of the fees for the next 2 years, so now we have to go to a little bit different budget model and get our increases paid for by the central operating budget, which, you know, this year looks like that's been negotiated, but we don't know how that's going to go longer term, so I'd say that's a bit of a challenge for us that we'll have to manage. One of the things we're going to do in athletics this year, and we've been working on it with an organization out of Ontario called the Student Athlete Mental Health Initiative. One of the things we want to do is try to create much greater awareness around mental health on campus using our venues and our events that we already have. So we do have a game planned for the Pandas hockey team already that will do an event around mental health. And we need to understand better how we can actually help in that area. So we're not experts in it, but there's an organization out of Ontario called, as I said, Student Athlete Mental Health Initiative, and they have some programs that we're going to try to buy into. As the president of Canada West, we're going to do it as the 17 Canada West schools. We're going to try to do some education and awareness raising around it. So that's one of the things we'd like to get a little bit better at, because we have spent a lot of time, and I would say a lot of money, on strength and conditioning and physical conditioning and physical training for our student athletes, and we have spent almost nothing on mental skills, mental coaching, mental health, all of that. And I think it's time we got into the 21st century before it's gone.
Any other questions? Got about 1 minute left, so probably enough time for one last question.
I think you should take Councillor Chang's question. Okay. Because mine isn't relevant at all.
My question is, my question is, I don't know the numbers to like possible international students or exchange students that are using our facilities, but have you looked into that data before in previous years, or when you get the data, perhaps from the registrar, would you break down that demographic to look at if exchange students, international students are using facilities or not? Because I'm at the International Center, and sometimes I get exchange students in my peer group, and they have no clue whatsoever to the things you offer. So just wondering how, any plans, or have you guys discussed how to reach out to those demographics?
Yeah, so in Campus and Community Recreation, we actually have a liaison that works with the International Student Center. It could be better. And I think your point about the statistics and can we develop enough statistics that supports understanding who's participating and who's not. So we can target and ensure that people do know what's going on. Yeah, that's what we're trying to accomplish for sure. So I don't think we have any specific statistics that I could pull out to say this volume of people, this percentage of international students are participating, but that's one of the things we'd definitely like to get to for sure.
Yeah, and I would say that my experience with international students is they're more likely to be receptive to coming out to the events because they're actively looking for things to do. Whereas people who've lived in Edmonton all their lives, they're just as clueless. And they're not looking, you know. And I think it's a mistake because they come to campus and they go home and they never really get an understanding of what's going on here. So I think they could take a lesson from the international students in getting involved and being interested in getting involved. So I think it'd be great. All right. 1 minute. That's a minute. Huh?
That's a minute. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm going into Overheim here soon. And
all right. Thank you very much.
Nice to see you again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Wonderful.
I thought the timer was up. I was like sitting in the
All right, so we'll jump back over to speaker's business very quickly. As is customary, according to standing orders, I have a quick little announcement. We would like to acknowledge that our university and our students' union are located on Treaty 6 territory. We are grateful to be on Cree, Saulteaux, Métis, Blackfoot, and Nakota Sioux territory, specifically the ancestral space of the Papachase Cree. These nations are our family, friends, faculty, staff, students, and peers. As members of the University of Alberta Students' Union, we honor the nation-to-nation treaty relationship. We aspire for our learning, research, teaching, and governance to acknowledge continuing colonial violence and respect Indigenous knowledges and traditions. The next meeting of Students' Council will take place on Tuesday, October 27th, 2015, at 6 p.m., right back here in Council Chambers. Before we get to announcements, or more announcements and attendance, we're actually, Council remembers this, at the start of the semester, we talked about waiting for the new members of Students' Council to come in before we took the oath of office. So we're quickly going to take the oath of office, and we'll move on to attendance very quickly. So I'm going to ask all members of Students' Council to please stand. So please repeat after me. I'll try to do this slowly. Thank you, Dylan.
Thank you, Noel.
I'm going to make Dylan cry. I am not here for me.
I am not here for me.
I am here for the people that lent me their power.
I am here for the people that lent me their power.
In exchange for a promise.
In exchange for a promise.
I will keep that promise.
I will keep that promise.
To make decisions with their interests in mind.
To make decisions with their interests in mind.
I will vote after knowing the facts, not before.
I will vote after knowing the facts, not before.
I will use Robert's rules for their purpose, not my own.
I will use Robert's rules for their purpose, not my own.
I will oppose ideas, not people.
I will oppose ideas, not people.
I will think before I speak, not speak just to think.
I will think before I speak, not speak just to think.
I will take the job seriously or not take the job at all.
I will take the job seriously or not take the job at all.
I will represent my fellow students' interests, not my own.
I will represent my fellow students' interests, not my own.
I am not here for me.
I am not here for me.
Thank you. Please be seated. Wonderful. So with that out of the way, we'll quickly take attendance. I'll just go by my hand copy here. Actually, it's just... Wonderful. All right. President Kinda. Vice President Rahman.
Here.
Vice President Hanwell.
Here, President.
Vice President Bonnerchek.
Here.
Vice President Kwan.
Yep.
Governor Khan.
Yep.
Councillor Allard.
Present.
Councillor Tronson.
Here.
Councillor Zhang. Councillor Burton. Councillor Dion.
Here.
Councillor Schlank. Councillor Angus.
Here.
Councillor Patches.
Here.
Councillor Johnson.
Here.
Councillor Chang.
Here.
Councillor Stephen. Is it Stephen or is it Stephen?
Stephen.
Councillor Wang?
Present.
Councillor K. Wang?
Here.
Is that pronounced Wang or is that Wang?
My last name is Wang.
Wang?
Okay. There's two
of us. Is it K?
Kai Sha.
Kai Sha.
Yeah.
Kai Sha Wang. Okay. I'll try to remember that. Councillor Patrick. Councillor Jason Wong.
Present.
Councillor Yu.
Present.
Councillor Singh.
Present.
Councillor Kornhoff.
Present.
Is that pronounced correctly?
Yes. Present.
Councillor Christensen.
Here.
Councillor Joanne.
Here.
Councillor Flamin.
Present.
Councillor Hodgson. Councillor Roussel. Councillor McKinnon. Councillor Kwan?
Present.
Mr. Bemula for Councillor Duan?
Here.
Councillor Adamaj?
Here.
Councillor Kevin Wong?
Here.
Councillor Xu?
Here.
Councillor Mustafis?
Here.
Councillor Lewis?
Here.
And I'm here. Wonderful. Is there anybody I missed? Wonderful. All right. With that, I think all of speakers' business is out of the way. So I'm actually going to move directly to General Orders Item 7A. Patches moves to appoint one member of Students' Council to the Audit Committee. Is there a seconder for that motion? Councillor Flamin? Councillor Patches, would you like to introduce your motion?
Hi, everybody. For those who don't know me slash new councillors, my name is Robin Patches, and I'm the Chair of the Audit Committee. And today we are accepting a nomination for a new member of the audit committee. So the quick download on what audit does is audit is essentially the best way to get to know how the student union works. We look through the finances of the student union and make sure everything is working correctly and everything's being done for the purpose it is intending. We have four main pillars that we take care of. First is we look over faculty association fees. So we look over FAMS, faculty association membership fees. Everyone pays a small bit on their tuition that goes toward their respective faculty association. And then our responsibility is to look over their budgets for the year and ensure that they're using this money appropriately. Secondly, we review and approve the students' union audit. So student union gets audited by a third party every year, and we approve that third party to conduct the audit, and then we approve the audit and bring it to council, at which point it is approved for the whole purpose. Third, we also review the credit card statements of the Students' Union, so keeping these guys in check. And last, we also review the profit and loss statement for the Students' Union businesses. So you can take a look at Students' Union businesses, for example, Dewey's, RAT, Subprint, Low Express, anything that falls under Students' Union umbrella, to make sure that they're being operated correctly, that their and their profits and losses aren't too out of line from what they have been in previous years. So with that, we meet on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. every other Wednesday. That is off-council Wednesdays. So if anyone has any questions, feel free to ask me, but that is audit committee in a nutshell. And except any member. Thank you.
Does anyone have any questions for Councillor Patches before we move into nominations? Any questions at all? All right. Thank you, Councillor Patches. We'll move into nominations. Are there any nominations for audit committee? I saw Councillor Adamaj's hand up, so hopefully this is the right microphone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to nominate Councillor Stephen.
Councillor Stephen, do you accept?
For this one?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
All right.
How do you spell Stephen? Is it PH?
Yeah. So, Councillor Stephen, are there any other nominations? See Vice President Rahman's hand up. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to nominate Councillor Kashyam Wong and Larry Cordoff. Councillor Wong.
Okay, so we'll go one at a time.
Sure.
We'll go with Councillor Wong first. Councillor Wong, do you accept? Thank you, Councillor Wong. And Councillor Kornhoff?
I do accept.
Ooh, yes. Exciting. All right, are there any other nominations?
How do you spell that?
Any other nominations? Okay. So, we'll close nominations there. So, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at things, there is only one position available. So, what we will do is we will go to a nomination-type system where we'll go in the order in which people were nominated. You'll have 1 minute to speak about why you should be the member, the new member of Audit Committee. Once both people have had a chance to speak for 1 minute, what we will then do is we'll go to a vote. I'll explain the whole voting process when we get there. So let me just... it's pretty exciting. Okay. So... we'll start with Councillor Stephen. Your 1 minute starts now.
Okay. Jumping right into the public speaking. Yes. I know I didn't sound too excited when I accepted it, but I'd like to get involved and help out. And if there's other positions that I can take, I'd take those. But if this is the best way I can help out, I will. But if you have experience auditing and you're in business or something associated, but maybe you should.
I'm going to say that Councillor Stephen finishes there. Very impassioned speech by Councillor Stephen. Good first speech to the Students' Council. We'll go to Councillor Kornhoff.
Hello, Larry Kornhoff, Law Counsel, Law Counselor. So I have some experience working with financial documents in an auditing setting in a law firm. I am in tax law class, which is exceptionally exciting. And I really am glad that I saw that presentation from Athletics and Recreation, because it surprised me how many law students are involved in sports and athletics and recreation, intramurals, two hockey teams from the faculty, from two male hockey teams, one female hockey team. It's a lot of fun. Anyway, so my point is, I want to be involved with the auditing committee because I want to bring that back to law.
Thank you very much to both Councillor Stephen and Councillor Kornhoff. What we'll do now is we'll go to the voting buttons that are in front of you by your microphone. So just because of the order in which they delivered their, they were nominated in, I'll activate the voting system right away here. A vote for Councillor Stephen, please press plus. A vote for Councillor Kornhoff, please press minus. I'm not trying to be discriminatory, I'm just going in the order in which they were nominated, okay? All right? I'm not suggesting who you should vote for either. I'm just going to we'll start voting now, so please vote. The voting will close in 3, 2, 1. So, congratulations to Councillor Kornhoff. All right, so we'll move on, go back to the agenda. So we'll go into, I don't think I've missed anything, so we'll go into executive committee reports. Do any members of the executive wish to make a report? Any members of the executive? Yes, Vice President Hanwell, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I just wanted to, I'm sorry again for my tardy report, but I wanted to update you folks on the number of pledges we have for Get Out the Vote. So, good news and sad news. The sad news is that we're at about 4,000 right now, which puts us significantly off of our original goal of 7,500 pledges. That said, I'm fairly confident that over the next little, like over the last 3 days, as a final push, we can make it to 5,000. As well as some of the pledges that we're inputting electronically, because we have lots in paper format. So, sadly, my goal has changed, but I'm still pretty pleased with the number of pledges we have, and hopefully that we'll get. As well, we have some numbers from the advanced polling station, the special polling station in the basement of Sub. So we heard from Elections Canada that we had somewhere just slightly over 3,000 students that went and voted in the special polls. Elections Canada was super, super happy with the setup. They were super happy with the turnout, and hopefully this happens again. I guess if we go to the polls again, it very well may. Overall, that's just what I wanted to update you folks on, is just numbers. So it's going, it's going, yeah. Pretty good.
Thank you very much. That's President Hanwell. Any other members of the executive who wish to make a report? Yes, President Kindo.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll just go over my report really quickly, just the most relevant things. So regarding the project about MNIF, like Mandatory Non-Instructional Fees, joint oversight project with the administration, we are working on a draft proposal, which also includes a draft formula by which these fees could increase. So we're not entirely pleased with how it is right now, and we'll continue in discussions and conversations with the administration. That's sitting on the back burner for now as we continue to work on Lister and figuring out what we're going to do regarding the representation of students in Lister Hall. So that's also ongoing, and when I do have something to bring to council, we'll bring it to council. We're just working in internal discussions with the exec team and our advocacy team right now. So that's Lister. A few other items coming up sort of on the radar have to do with an all-you-care-to-eat meal plan, which does affect students in Lister and will affect students who in the future will live in the Peter Lougheed residence. This meal plan significantly increases the cost for students because it's anywhere from like an 11% to a 50% increase depending on what tier of meal plan you're on right now. However, the administration says that other students in other schools do like this version of a meal plan, but we're going to continue to work on this for now. And then also at RBAC today, we talked about rent increases coming up for some housing on campus. Other than that, we have a board meeting this Friday that Governor Kahn can also speak to if you have questions. Just two motions that I talked about last time regarding the building of new residences on campus. So they're on my report if you want to look at them. Those are the big things happening. There's a bunch of other little stuff going on, but if you have any questions, please let me know. Thank you.
Thank you very much, President Kinda. Any other members of the executive who wish to make a report? Seeing none, we'll move on to board and committee reports. Do any committee chairs or any members of any boards wish to make a report? Vice President Bondarchuk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to put on my chair of finance hat. So, just a couple of points to update council on. So, with the new dedicated fee unit approval process, we have gone through the first DFU for the first round of it, so I'm glad to report that Student Legal Services has had their financial package approved and will be receiving their DFU funding. Yay! So, next up will be a couple other DFUs who have to get their things into me by the end of October, so Finance Committee can review it then. And my second point as well is for anyone, or I should say that at the next council meeting, I'll be bringing a motion forward to nominate a member for Finance Committee. We're one seat down, so anyone who wants to be on Finance Committee, start thinking about it now. It's a lot of fun. Please do. As well, sort of related, not actually, for the Athletics and Rec fee presentation earlier, just as a heads up, if anybody has any questions for that committee, Vivian and I are the two SU seats on it. So come to us if you have any questions, comments, concerns. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Vice President Bondarchuk. For any committee chairs or members of any boards, make sure just to press the button so that I see that you're requesting speaking turn, so that I'm just going to go in this order because it goes in order of who requested when. That's the easiest way for me to do it. So if you'd like, just press the Bluetooth looking button in front of you. I'm going to go with Bluetooth. I'm old. Yeah. Bluetooth is new. So we'll go to Councillor Kevin Wong. Go ahead.
Yeah. So NomCon actually just met right before council today, and our role is to appoint students to the various committees. And the work committee that we're doing today is Student Health and Dental Planning Committee. And we've appointed three students, Abby Rance, Nicholas Diaz, who was the former Vice President of Student Life, so he'll be extremely knowledgeable, and Sean Boisson, who is also a member previously. He was a student at large and decided to get involved again. And one more thing that I wanted to mention is that the Golden Bears and Pandas Legacy Fund Committee, there's two seats on it, and one currently we only have one applicant, so we need one more. So if you could advertise this position, because the deadline is this Friday, dun dun dun. So yeah, that's all that I have for today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Kevin Wong. We'll go to Councillor Adamage.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I'm speaking from Council Administration Committee, CAC. So we have finally come to a decision of the train wreck, also known as Council Jackets. We did come to a final decision. We decided to stick with the old Democratic tradition of sticking with the vote that was made initially, of keeping with the hoodies. So that order will be made soon. I already have sizes, the original sizes of all the previous counselors, and I'm going to send out an email to newer counselors as well to ask for sizes and what sizes. I'm not sure if we have any more prototypes, is that what they're called, or whatever, samples, but I'll look into that. So, other notes from our last meeting, we also talked about expanding counselor engagement. So if any counselors have ideas on that, please let me know. And also, we came up with an October council social gathering. Nothing too special, but we're proposing that next Friday, October 23rd at, I think, 5 p.m., we'd have a council bar night at probably Dewey's. So, yeah, if you're interested in that, let me know. I'll post stuff on that. Thank you.
I like everything about what Councillor Adamash just said.
We'll go to Councillor Allard.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So, first I'd like to say welcome to all the new councillors. And just to quickly introduce myself, my name is Justice Allard. I'm the chair of the SU Bylaw Committee. The Bylaw Committee is in charge of drafting bylaws for the SU, ensuring the bylaws are up to date, doing editorial changes on bylaws. We're kind of where new bylaws and changes to existing bylaws come from, as well as we're the group that drafts the plebiscite referenda questions that you occasionally see on the SU elections. So just a quick update to all of council. As you probably have seen, our main project over the summer has been rectifying or proposing and creating some changes to the elections bylaws and the elections process to update it, modernize it, close some loopholes, and just follow the consultation and the advice that we received from a lot of people in the SU who have a lot of experience. And at our next meeting of bylaw, which will be next Wednesday at 5 p.m., I'll send out the location on the council WhatsApp. The agenda is also available. We're going to be kind of having a refocusing discussion on where we want to go next. We've got a few possible routes that we're going to go that are really exciting that I'll bring to council when they're hashed out a little bit further.
Thank you very much, Councillor Allard. We'll go to Councillor Dion. Or Councillor Angus, sorry.
Hi, I'm speaking on behalf of Councillor Virgin for policy. So we are currently back in the swing for the year. We are trying to set up a meeting date. For now, we're going to try to meet monthly just because there isn't a ton of stuff that policy is dealing with. But if things do pick up, we will have the plan of meeting bi-weekly or just setting additional meetings if required. Aside from that, we will keep you guys in the loop once the date has been decided. We're just waiting for one of the committee members to fill out the doodle, and then we are good to go.
Thank you very much, Councillor Angus. We'll go to Governor Khan.
Hi, everyone. So I'm going to be having a meet. Sorry, there's a lot of echo. I'm going to be having a meeting on Friday for a general board meeting. But over the last week, I've had two subcommittee meetings, the Safety, Health, and Environment Committee meeting, and the most eventful thing that happened at that meeting was the changes to the terms of reference for B-Check were successfully passed, and some of the additions made is that this subcommittee is now going to provide oversight regarding student health wellness initiatives and strategies on campus. I've got a list of the more specific policies within my report. I also had a meeting with Learning and Discovery Committee, and there, at that committee meeting, the Graduate Student Association had a presentation about their goals for the school year. I've also highlighted some of the key points about that presentation within my little memo. The things I thought was most important was learning about the GSA's tuition stances, and just noting basically the subtle differences that they had from the SU. In particular, that the GSA does support tuition increase directly back to the Alberta Consumer Price Index. That's it.
Thank you very much, Governor Khan. Councillor Patches.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to provide a brief update on audit. So now that we're getting into the swing of the school year, we're starting to receive a ton of FA reports. So we've been quite busy in the last couple of meetings reviewing Faculty Association's financial reports and then going over their expenses to ensure it all lines up. So just to keep everyone updated, that's what audit's been up to the last meetings. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any other board or committee chairs who wish to make a report? Seeing none. Yes, Governor Kahn.
This is for the SLS Board of Directors. So we will be having a meeting tomorrow with the GSA to talk about the GSA SLS partnership agreement. We'll basically be discussing the proposal and from there basically go forward on whether it's going to work out or not. That's about it.
Thank you very much. Any other reports? Seeing none, we'll go into question period. So the first question was a written question from Councillor Christensen to Councillor Adamage. The last meeting of Students' Council, the chair of the Council Administration Committee mentioned some issues with the council apparel that was initially decided on in July/August. The chair could please provide a formal update to all members regarding the situation and why this process has been delayed. That would be greatly appreciated. Councillor Adamage has written a lengthy response as well as provided some information in his report. Councillor Christensen, would you like to ask a follow-up question to Councillor Adamage's written question?
I'm satisfied, thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Christensen. And thank you for submitting a written question. Those are always very much appreciated, so you can get very good and satisfactory response. So we'll go to oral questions. We'll go to Councillor Kevin Wong.
Hi. So I have a question for the incoming councillors. So the first question will be to Councillor Brett Stephen. I have three questions for you, actually. First of all, how do you like council so far? Two, how do you want to get involved? And three, what can we as councillors do to help you get accustomed to council?
Those are some great questions, Councillor Kevin Wong. Unfortunately, two of those questions are actually out of order because you're only allowed to ask one question to a councillor or a member of Students' Council at a time. But, Councillor Stephen, feel free to respond to all of Councillor Kevin Wong's questions if you would like. Go ahead.
I would say the only things that I'm not too sure about are just sort of insofar as committees and things, which ones still have open spots and which ones we could, as incoming councillors, could nominate ourselves, or not nominate ourselves for, but, you know, try and get involved with. And I've been forewarned to learn about Robert's Rules of Order, so I've been working on that. And I can't really think of anything so far. It's been maybe like a half hour. But, but thank you for asking, Karen.
Thank you very much, Councillor Stephen. For new councillors, fear not, I will attempt to do a Robert's Rules presentation at the next meeting of Students' Council, but so that everyone's up to speed and everything that is going on during council. We'll move on to next question from President Kinda.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This question's for our VP Hanwell. What two events do you have coming up that you would like council to attend?
Thank you for the great question, President Kinda. Two election events, sorry, I totally forgot these in my report. The first is tomorrow from 3 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. There will be a debate, forum-esque, whatever you want to call it. I'm calling it a debate between four Edmonton Strathcona candidates. So it will be on substage, 3 to 4:30, hour and a half debate. We have a moderator. It will be the president of the Political Science Undergraduate Association, Marina Bannister, as I'm sure many of you know her. The second event is an elections party. I forgot that I won't see any, or I likely won't see any of you before the 19th. So on October 19th, in Dewey's, we will have an election viewing party where we'll get together, we'll have some themed drinks, probably some food, and we'll watch the election results roll in. So get there whenever. The election results will probably start coming in. I think they usually come in around, like 8 o'clock, maybe 7. So come whenever, stay till whenever. It'll probably be open late. I think there's going to be prizes for guessing certain constituencies and some fun stuff like that. So yeah, come up to both of those if you have the chance or have the time. They're both free.
Thank you very much, Vice President Hanwell. Go to Mr. Bemula.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This question's to Vice President Hanwell. Sorry for the retroactive nature of this question, sort of. Some students that had approached me regarding the polling stations that Elections Canada had set up, and they had heard about the Get Out the Vote campaign, but they hadn't heard about the polling stations, which I thought was kind of weird. What has the Get Out the Vote campaign done to get the word out about the polling stations? And was there some, like, did you see some areas of improvement in getting the word out about that? Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure. That's a really good question, actually. And something we definitely thought about for the special polling station. So what we did is the Students' Union has access to an all-students email list. So we have every single student who is registered for classes in the fall term right now. It's just this information sharing agreement that we signed with the university. Usually we use that list to send out monthly newsletters, which I'm sure you probably have all seen. But we can also just send regular emails. So I was able to convince our marketing department that we should put out just an email to all students regarding the advanced polls. So we sent an email to every single student who's registered in classes right now, an email telling them where to vote. We had a map on there. It might have went to a spam, like the spam folder of your friend's inbox, but it did go to all the students. And the reason, so Get Out the Vote didn't send anything in terms of emails or text message. And the reasons, and this was something I didn't exactly know what to do, and it was kind of a judgment call, because we sent out this email to all students on Monday morning. We were considering sending something out Wednesday. But one of the biggest things that we've heard when we're canvassing from students is every time that we ask for somebody's email or for their phone number, their first question is, how many emails are you going to send me? What are you going to send me? When are you going to send it to me? So at the end of the day, I thought, you know what, we've hit every student with emails already. I wasn't planning on doing any phone calls, so the only thing we would have added is another email to people who probably don't want any more emails in their inbox, or a text message. So it was kind of a judgment call. We went for just the all students email, but that's good to know. Maybe, you know, in the future I'll make sure that we send out more emails or just more communication.
Thank you very much, Vice President Hanwell. We'll go to Councillor Jason Wong.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is a question for Vice President Packer. You mentioned in your report that you had a phone conversation with a educational leadership track instructor from UBC. So from what I've read, it sounds like the University of Alberta is considering implementing a similar stream to help faculty teach. The toughest part is, like, just talking to staff on campus is, like,
they understand that it's inevitable and it's going to happen. They just don't want to have that conversation because it is really tricky. Because it's a labor issue. And so obviously, like, red flags come up when you're talking about labor issues, and you sort of want to be close to the experts. But I really would like to see, the one thing that I'm worried about is that students will be excluded from the conversation, and they'll just say, it's a labor issue, so we don't need a student representative when we're talking about that. So that's what I'm trying to do right now. Just make sure that the student perspective is heard on this issue.
Thank you very much, Vice President Rahman. Go to Councillor Kevin Lund.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is directed at Vice President Student Life, VP Kwan, and I would like an update on the Director of Student Life, how the interviews go, who was selected, what is the progress so far?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Councillor Wang, for the question. So right now we're still in the process of kind of deciding which candidate we want to go with. We just had our interviews last week. We had two candidates that we interviewed, and they were both really good. So we actually kind of decided over the weekend who we want to give the offer to, but yeah, right now we can't really disclose anything because they haven't accepted a job formally yet, but once they get back to us, we can disclose this to everybody.
Thank you very much. Councillor Chang?
So my question is for Vice President Hanwell regarding the polling station. So just out of curiosity, would it have been possible to have the polling station at the alumni room, which is more visible than somewhere tucked in the basement somewhere?
Great question. It would be possible, I think. Physically, like logistically, it would be possible. But the biggest things I would understand that Elections Canada wanted is they wanted more space. So we were able to rent out a bigger space for them downstairs. We could rent it out for a longer period of time. So you may not have seen it, but Elections Canada was there for three weeks. Yeah, so they were there for 3 weeks. So we didn't want them to kind of commandeer the alumni room for 3 weeks. And the final thing I would imagine would be privacy. So whereas in the lower level, you have not see-through walls. And so you're able to have like a very private area. Whereas in the alumni room, because it's kind of surrounded in glass or 50% of it is surrounded in glass, it might be a privacy issue. So for those reasons, we put the polling we rented that space out to Elections Canada. And at the same time, it was something that Elections Canada requested. So we showed them the space that we had. We showed them the space that we could rent to them. And that was kind of what they picked as well. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Councillor Ademash.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to President Kenda. I have a question about part of a report talking about the Lister Hall new tower. I'm wondering, is there a specific date when the building of it is supposed to start and when it's supposed to be finished by?
Thank you for the question. So I believe they want to start building by June 2018. It's written in one of the information sheets. I can look that up and send it to you. It's a pretty aggressive timeline, but that's when they also want to start building the new residents in East
Campus
Building as well, but I think
Lister,
the new Lister Tower is a priority for sure.
Thank you very much.
Councillor Flannan. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This question is for Vice President Rahman. I was curious if you were in a position to share any plans or ideas you had for November coming up in a couple of weeks.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thanks for the question, Councillor Plowman. I'm getting in contact with the Gateway because in the past, the SU and the Gateway members have done a competition for November, and somebody from the executive should correct me, probably an executive committee meeting, but I think we can invite members of council to this as well because it's for a good cause. But basically, yeah, we're going to partner with the Gateway probably and then just go from there.
Wonderful. Are there any other additional questions for question period? Councilor Christensen.
Just a brief question for the Vice President External. About a month ago now, we spoke about the possibility of the Vice President External coming to the medical students and speaking about the Get Out the Vote campaign. This was followed up by him saying that he would get back to me about this. The election is fairly close upcoming, and we're just wondering if this was ever going to happen. I know it would be excellent for the SU to perhaps be more involved in the medical student body, since most people don't even know that the SU is even, they're even part of the SU. So I just wanted to bring up this concern and see if that was still a plan or if that would be a plan perhaps in the future.
It's a very good accountability question. Long story short, I totally forgot to send that email. It's been on my whiteboard, and if you could send my whiteboard, it's kind of a little crazy right now. I'll send that as soon as as soon as possible, but thank you for the question and the reminder.
All right, so that wraps up our first 15 minutes of question period. I don't have anyone on the speakers list at the moment. So I will move on unless I see five placards or five lights light up on my screen over here. Seeing none, we'll close question period there. We'll move on to board and committee business, of which there is none. So we'll go to general orders, item 7B. Con moves to amend Bylaw 2200, Executive Committee and Board of Governors, Representative Elections, Plebiscites, and Referenda of the Students' Union, and Bylaw 2300, Counselor Elections to Students' Council and General Faculty's Council, based on the following first principles. The CRL shall not disqualify or penalize a candidate for a second time unless it is for a different infraction. To prevent the relitigation of issues that were or could have been raised in the first action. To prevent individuals from holding back evidence in a die board hearing. Is there a seconder for this? Councilor Christensen? So I will allow Governor Kahn to introduce. Just give me 1 second to adjust the timer. Whenever you're ready, Governor.
Hi. So, I guess just to kind of give a background on what kind of made me want to amend this bylaw in the first place. And it came back to, this issue actually kind of arose during the election cycle we just had, with Tanner Sleeman being disqualified twice for the same infraction. Now, what happened there was an issue where the person got disqualified for something, and then disqualified again for the exact same thing. And it was an exact same scenario. Now, this is not saying that that scenario should have changed altogether, but it's a worry for future elections that a student would get disqualified for something and then afterwards get disqualified again for the same thing just on the basis of getting more evidence. What this kind of, by allowing this to happen, what happens is it incentivizes the CRO or whoever to withhold evidence as opposed to putting everything up in front in the first place. Now, one of the reasons why things happened the way they did in the last election cycle is the fact that our bylaws were set up in a way that the CRO did not have very much time to basically do an investigation. Now, over the last few weeks, we've been changing the bylaws around that, and we've come to, based off of the agreement with that we've had what we've agreed to in terms of the changes, we've set up a better guideline and a timeline to allow for the investigation to happen. Now that fix has happened, what I feel should happen is that the CRO should not be able to disqualify or penalize a candidate for a second time unless it is for a different infraction. This principle, my biggest concern in wanting to have this put in place is the fact that if, let's say, Tamer Steeman did get disqualified a second time, he appealed the decision and he lost.
What that person could do is essentially submit a judicial review application, and the court would basically, and he would have grounds, as a law student, I feel that he would have grounds for procedural fairness to basically overturn that decision. And that would be really embarrassing for the student union if that were to happen, because it's basically saying that, hey, our bylaws sucked, and it didn't catch this. That's about it.
Thank you very much, Governor Khan. We'll now go into debate. Is there any debate on item 7B? Yes, President Kennedy, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So while I do understand, like the reaction to what happened in the last election and why this could be a problem, I'm not particularly in favor of this new change. Just because, well, I have a couple questions actually. Elections are very time sensitive, so that is a constraint, but it's just a reality of our elections. But in terms of a candidate not getting punished more than once for the same infraction, what about an example where a candidate breaks postering rules twice? You know, should they not get punished for that the second time? And then what happens in that instance? Because that's also a disincentive then to follow postering rules if you can get away with it the second time. And I think that in the case where sometimes there is new evidence in these situations, which is very likely just because of our time constraints, it should be used. And honestly, as a student's council, like, we don't create the same kinds of we're not the same as a criminal court or a criminal proceeding or anything. We create our own laws and our own bylaws. And while we should keep them accountable and make sure they're good laws and good bylaws, it doesn't mean that they have to always be in line with what the Court of Queen's Bench would do. So we're in our right to make our bylaws the way we want to, and if we want to disqualify or penalize a candidate more than once for breaking the same rule, that's up to us, because they broke that rule. So, yeah, those are my thoughts right now, but I'd love to hear what members of the bylaw committee think, or anyone in general.
Thank you very much, President Kinda. Go to Councillor Tronson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wasn't really involved in the drafting of these first principles. I think this is something that Governor Khan is bringing forward kind of on his own initiative. But I think from what I interpret these first principles to mean, it's not intended to penalize two violations of the same rule violation. It's intended to prevent people being disqualified for the same instance of that rule violation. So if somebody broke postering rules once on the Tuesday of the election and then got disqualified for it, for example, they couldn't be disqualified again for that same violation that happened on the Tuesday. It would have had to be a separate violation for them to be brought, for them to be disqualified again. So it's preventing relitigation of the same instance of a bylaw violation, not violation of the same rule again. That's at least what I interpret, but please correct me if I'm wrong, Governor Khan. And also, regarding creating processes that resemble those used by courts, I think, well, I agree with President Kinda that we don't need to mimic everything that a court actually does, because we're our own institution, we're our own organization, we can set our own rules. I think this one is a good safeguard from a procedural fairness standpoint, just to prevent the instance where we're violating the right to a fair proceeding for candidates. I think Governor Khan did say it pretty well when he said it would be embarrassing for the SU to be totally out of touch with how this should run, but that's just my viewpoint on it. So thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Tronson. We'll go to Councillor Allard.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to make a couple points. First, just a note, especially for new councillors, just to remember that as these are first principles, they're really just reflecting the principle of the spirit of the change that we want to make. Second principles would be the actual wording and the change to the bylaws. So, you know, when you're voting on this, really what we're trying to determine is this a change that we think is necessary? And then the second principle is because these changes, proposed changes, did not come from bylaw committee, they came from Governor Khan on his own. Second principles would come to bylaw committee, and we would create this change in bylaw, draft this being said, this is getting into a really difficult area of bylaw. It's always been a challenge because, especially when you're talking about investigation and anything involving DIBOR in which they have to make a ruling, and it usually only happens in elections, which are also time-sensitive, which is a separate difficult issue. Really quickly, like maybe some of you remember last year, the capacity of the SU of the CRO of DIBOR to actually investigate and rule to the standard that we would hold, you know, the court to in like a criminal case or an appeal at an actual board. Like we quickly, it quickly becomes clear that we don't necessarily have that capacity. So while I agree that we should follow the rules of procedural fairness, I think we also do need to leave a little bit of wiggle room to reflect the fact that, you know, we don't always have the capacity to make these, that another decision-making body would make, or would have. But that being said, maybe, I don't really have the mental capacity right now, because of midterms and lack of sleep, to propose an amendment, but I would like to suggest that maybe, we could look at changing the wording to something like the CRO shall not put forward a ruling a second time on the same complaint or incident of suspected contravention or something like that. Just to kind of clarify that issue of, like, can you try to disqualify someone for overposing twice? And also that maybe to cover the situation that I was saying earlier, that we don't always necessarily have the capacity to investigate. We're on a really strict time limit. Maybe we could try to incorporate some sort of, like, backdoor clause for, like, if new evidence arises or something. I don't know. I don't have any actual, like, specific wording proposed right now, but just putting it out there. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Councillor Allard. I believe Councillor Kurnoff was next. Give me one second here. Sorry, wrong now.
Thank you. I agree with the 2 points Councillor Fronson made and the reference to procedural fairness. I was a member of the tribunal on the DIBOR board last year, and every principle that the tribunes took to assessing the evidence before them was very much like an adversarial process, obviously. Most of you will know that. That's, I think this is why we have this system in place. You have a ruling made by the CRO and a possibility to appeal it, and the DI board makes the decision. And if you make the ruling within the time constraints, I just don't see how you can give a new CRO ruling once the DI board has made that decision based on the evidence presented, of course, and it is time sensitive, and evidence might come up later. Perhaps there needs to be something else in the bylaws about evidence, but I fully agree with the principles of procedural fairness. If you have two parties speaking on to their in favor of their positions against each other, they've had their chance to speak and to have to bring up new evidence a second time. I don't even think that that's what the bylaws were intended for in the DI board, or the DI board. What do you call it? The DI board framework of constitution. And again, as Councillor Fronson said, I agree with the same. If you make the same infraction many times, then you just get disqualified for the same thing, and then you may appeal each time. Also, the same as Councillor Fronson said, although we don't have to have the bylaws and the process is similar as is used by the courts outside of the university, this is still a legitimate, real-life governing body that needs to be accountable to its members. I'm done. Thank
you very much, Councillor Cournon. We'll go to Vice President Rahman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think my first question is an easy one to answer, I hope. I'm just wondering, because you guys said, like, if you're disqualified at once, you can get disqualified a second time, and that really doesn't make sense. Because, like, if you're disqualified the first time, you should just be done. Of course, unless an appeal goes to not vote. And I'm assuming that people admitted, like, the fact that it could be appealed by that vote, but just clarification, that would be great. The second thing, the rest of my comments come from the point of elections being, like, so we're at 3 right now, to prevent individuals from holding back evidence on a DAC board hearing. The thing is, like, we don't have everybody invited to a DAC board meeting. So if you're random student X who sees a candidate putting down their opponent's campaign posters, and you file a report to the CRO, and then they rule on that, and then it's decided that, and then that board, like, overturns a decision to disqualify a candidate for that. And then you get new evidence from a second complaint that says, I saw the exact same thing. I saw that candidate rip down their opponent's posters, and then I heard them say to their friend, like, yeah, I really don't want my opponent to win. I'm going to do anything to win this election. That runs into a tricky situation, because it's the exact same infraction that they're talking about, but you have new information. And so, like, this is absurd, and I really hope it doesn't happen, but I'd be worried that people, like, submit crap complaints that obviously aren't going to pass and be like, I'm accusing this person of tearing down posters of some infraction that obviously won't get approved by the CRO. And then if real evidence comes to back that claim, you're going to, like, the CRO is going to turn down students who said, like, I know that you have a complaint, but I already ruled on this. So I can't go back on my original ruling.
Thank you very much, Vice President Rahman. We'll go to, I think, Councillor Christensen.
So just to kind of speak to some of the points. First, so part of this, for this to work, it involved also making the changes that we made last time to the time the CRO has to report so that they can make take longer to make their rulings. So in a situation like this, I wouldn't expect it to happen so much with posters or anything like that. But like ripping down people's posters, like, although that is a possibility, my mic keeps cutting off. Although that is a possibility, I don't think it that would be something that someone would be disqualified for exactly. I think they'd probably be penalized with penalties, but that could disqualify them too. But also, I do believe at one of the DAC board meetings, one of the things said was when the CRO tried to bring forth new evidence to that meeting, they were stopped from bringing forth any evidence that happened after the ruling, which, so this is going to move to help that. And I would also suggest, I told Governor Kahn this, that it is important that in bylaw 1500 we also allow for the possibility of evidence found after the ruling but before a DAC board hearing. So, like, after the ruling. Ruling happens on Thursday, DAC board hearing happens on Monday. That evidence found between Thursday and Monday could also be included at the hearing. That was not allowed this past year because they believe only the evidence that was available at the time of the ruling can be included. So obviously, we wouldn't want someone who's committed clandestine activities to be getting away with them just because of procedural problems like that when the full scope of the evidence hasn't been looked at. So I also think that change needs to be made. That won't be made in this, likely. But that's another thing that needs to be addressed in this. And I think this at least is the starting of making things more fair for, or more accountable and more just for our bylaws.
Thank you very much, Councillor Christensen. Just before we continue on with the rest of the speakers list, I just want to point out a couple things for new councillors, but also just as a quick reminder, you only have 2 speaking turns for a particular motion. So, for example, if Councillor Allard were to speak again, he would have no more speaking turns unless council decided to suspend standing orders. I think I had something else. That was the other thing. In terms of speaking turns, I'm going to prioritize people who have not had a chance to speak yet. So if you've already spoken, I'm going to bump you down on the list so that people who have not had a chance to speak yet have the opportunity to do so. If we start running into a situation where we're running short on time, which I don't think we will, but just for future cases,
That will allow for people who are speaking the second time, I'm probably going to kind of cut their time in half or something like that, so that people have a reasonable amount of time to speak, and it's fair for everyone. So, just so that people don't feel like they're being ignored by myself. Just wanted to clarify that. So, I'll go to Governor Khan.
Okay, just a response to some of the stuff. In general, everything that Councillor Thompson said is correct. So, just to go back to the different pulsar infractions. So, if you have this, it doesn't, like, when you get penalized for a pulsar infraction, it's for each individual pulsar infraction. There's not, like, one penalty for all pulsar infractions. So, like Councillor Thompson said, if you did rip up a pulsar on Tuesday and you ripped up a pulsar on Wednesday, those are two separate infractions. So this is not even touching on something like that. It applied in, I mean, what this might do as a reaction is make the infractions a bit more specific, which it should be. I mean, you shouldn't be getting an infraction that's super generalized to the point like, oh, you tampered with votes, period. I mean, if it's like you tampered with votes in this instance, if you do it like that, I mean, you're basically getting around the situation for this. But when you do it, when the CRO is essentially creating the infraction in a way that's that general, you're getting into some really deep trouble when it comes to like someone who might judicially review the dive board decision. And once again, we get into that trouble where usually in a situation like this, the court is looking for something very serious to have happened in order for it to overturn. I'm making this policy because this is something that is very serious. Look, I understand I'm a law student, but I've worked in an immigration law office for 2 years. The immigration board is essentially an administrative tribunal, the same thing as a dive board, an administrative tribunal. This is essentially what I do at work every other week, and this is one of the biggest things that I end up picking up on. That's kind of where the motivation behind this is coming back. And once again, it's going to look very bad for the SU if a court overturns a dive board hearing and basically makes it look like our bylaws are not up to snuff. Back to the double disqualification that VP Rahman talked about. So we're talking about a scenario that someone gets disqualified by the CRO, they go to the dive board, they win at the dive board, and the disqualification is overturned. And then the CRO disqualifies that person again for the exact same infraction, and it goes back to the dive board, and then they, let's say, change the decision. This is the scenario that this is supposed to try to catch. Hopefully that's clear enough. Now, going back to the point about not wanting to make this like a court, yes, you're right, that the administrative tribunal of the SU and the dive board have great deference in their decision-making abilities. I understand that we are not completely independent of the court. I understand that people don't want to make this like a court, but we are essentially run over by a court to look over this kind of matter. It's not a question of not wanting to make it like, it already is. That's already the scenario as it is. Back to the comment about the additional evidence. Once again, we as the SU Council just voted on what is appropriate time for a CRO to look for evidence. We've already set that up. To say all of a sudden, oh, the CRO needs more time, what if something else happens? It's saying that all the work that we did to change some of the bylaws a few weeks ago was completely pointless. I mean, we've come to an agreement, and this is what we're going with.
20 seconds.
Yeah, that's it.
Sorry to interrupt. I just want to make sure you're cognizant of time. Thank you very much, Governor Khan. We'll go to Councillor Lewis.
So my biggest issue with this is the whole thing about like getting disqualified, dive board overturns it, being disqualified again, because there's either new evidence or evidence that wasn't allowed at the dive board hearing comes back up. And then this time goes to the dive board hearing with additional evidence, and the person remains disqualified afterwards because the dive board accepts that information. And so one of like two things happens here. So either they have the information before the dive board hearing, and the dive board hearing accepts that ruling, and it's not overturned, and we don't need a second ruling, or we don't have that information, and we still need it afterwards. So if we don't have that information, And we're not making a bylaw that just chucks that information out because we're saying we can't rule on it again. Like, we're effectively preventing ourselves from having good policing. Because no matter how much time we give, there's always possibility of information being left behind, ignored, or needing to be reevaluated. Like, there is no physical way for us to have 100% guarantee in this scenario. And I think that we need to understand that the whole scenario that you want to legislate of is only going to come up in this type of situation. Like, we're not going to have a CRO purposely withholding evidence at a dive board hearing. Like, there's no purpose for that. It's ridiculous. Like, in that type of case, we've done a bad job as a council at trying to hire a CRO. Like, it is directly our fault in that scenario. So, I don't quite understand what we're trying to do here. Because the whole problem is just not actually getting solved.
Thank you very much, Councillor Lewis. Go to Councillor Flynn.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My biggest concern with the way this is worded now is if this was in place prior to the last election, the individual in question would have had a free pass almost. Disqualified once, appealed, won, had the disqualification overturned, was disqualified again for the same infraction, probably could have appealed a second time, chose not to. And then ended up coming out later and admitted to wrongdoing. So in that case, with the information they had, the dive board got it wrong. But are we going to call them out on that? Or, like Councillor Lewis said, is that our fault for hiring a CRO that, with the time involved, couldn't do adequate policing or investigation? Or... is it the dive board who, in their limited time, they trying to force... never mind, that's it.
Thank you very much, Councillor Flamin. We'll go to Councillor Kurenhoff with your second speaking turn.
Thank you. A couple questions from a few minutes ago. The dive board hearings, I can't remember who asked, who made this point about whether any student knows about what happens in the dive board. The dive board hearings, to my knowledge, are open hearings to any student of the university. And the we're not talking about 100% evidence, right? There's a balance, and it's not like a criminal trial where it has to be proven so far beyond guilt and that the defense just... It's not like criminal trial at all. It's a hearing based on the constraints that we have, and if there's a problem with timing, perhaps people could consider including a disqualification after the election has already been called. I don't know if that's something that's ever been considered, but personally, I don't see a problem with that. I think it just goes to fairness. You've got the CRO making decisions, being the police, and, of course, a third party, the hearing body, weighing in the evidence. I think we need to separate the evidence issue from the double disqualification issue. That's my gut. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Kornhoff. We'll go to Councillor Tronson, I believe.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So, under the recent amendments to the election bylaws that we passed over the last couple of weeks, the CRO has enough time now, or as much time as council was prepared to give the CRO in investigating a complaint, that they should gather sufficient evidence to be presented at the hearing. So, the issue of additional evidence coming to light, as Councillors Lewis and Fawn have mentioned, should no longer be an issue as much as it was in the past. We tried to address that by giving them ample time to investigate, or as Councillor Kornhoff was mentioning, as much evidence as possible should be coming to the hearing initially. I think what we're trying to do here is that we should have one hearing with the two parties with as much evidence as can possibly be presented at the one hearing, have the issue dealt with, and I think that's the intention with these first principles. Regarding evidence coming to light after the fact, the idea is that because we've now given the CRO enough time to collect that evidence, there should not be that much more necessitating relitigation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Tronson. We'll go to Councillor Allard.
Thank you very much. Unfortunately, Councillor Tronson just stole a bunch of my thunder. basically, what I was going to say is that the amendments that we made at last council meeting has empowered the CRO to take up 5 days or 3 additional days past the 48-hour deadline to gather evidence before they will make a ruling. As was said, that is about as much time as we, as council, were comfortable giving them, and it's about 50% of the election period currently. So I guess, like, what we're really trying to choose between here is that time realistic, or and for the sake of creating a framework that will allow for efficient elections, do we empower the CRO to have those 5 days and assume that if any evidence does not come to light within those 5 days, they, as much evidence that we have the capacity to gather has come to light, the CRO to make a proper ruling, that is also not included in the amount of appeal. Or if basically if we strike down what Governor Khan is proposing, and I still do have some issues with the way that it's worded, but I do agree with it in principle, we are essentially saying that that 5-day timeline is moot, and that we do not trust that that 5 days is enough time for the CRO to be empowered to create or to make a proper and educated ruling, in which case we are encouraging a scenario like happened last time where the CRO is once again forced to make a ruling that is, or at least is able to make a ruling that is incomplete and then make another ruling, which I don't know necessarily if it's that big of an issue, but it doesn't really look that good for the SU. It does look like a big screw up. And as I mentioned last time, anything where you're releasing a public ruling based on incomplete information is going to sway the election results. So, anyways.
Thank you very much, Councillor Allard. We'll go to Vice President Hanwell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I have a few questions mainly, and then with my next speaking turn, maybe I'll go into debate. So I'm still not clear about what the harms are currently with the system we have. So I'll run through, because we've been talking a lot of hypotheticals, and I'll run through a hypothetical for you and how I see it. So right now, as Councillor Allard said, the only harm that has come to my mind right now is this idea of forcing your hand in a ruling. So if I'm the CRO, I hear there's rumbles of somebody who might have broke the rules, but it's within 6 hours of the end of the election. I'm going to put together like a kind of Mickey Mouse kind of like ruling just to keep the clock ticking so I can do another one. So I can add more evidence and find more evidence. Fair enough, that's a harm, but I think Councillor Allard has already said, we have lots of time. We've changed that bylaw. As a CRO, I have lots of time to make that ruling. I don't need to buy more time by putting together a not fully thought out ruling. So here's my hypothetical, is if it's the idea that we want to fix a system where, as a CRO, I disqualify somebody. That person wins an appeal, whether it's of their own merit or faulty evidence, whatever it is, the candidate wins the appeal. As the CRO, again, hypothetically, I think that's not true, or I don't know whatever my motive is, I disqualify them again on the same basis. And, okay, so that's the issue. Now, I see that happening for, like, really one reason, if not two. The first reason being, I'm vindictive, which I think that's been said. I don't think that's possible, and that's something that we can't really change through bylaws, to be honest. The other option is, I've been given new evidence of some sort. And here we have another split off. So let's say I do have new evidence, and I say, you know what? Yes, the evidence was incomplete, but I have new evidence. Either A, under the current system, I would take that new evidence and I guess use the same infraction and go to die board under the same ruling and almost review the ruling. The way I see this bylaw working is I would go and I would just have a whole other ruling. And I would most likely use the same evidence that I had before and just put that into a new ruling. So, yes, it might look more proper, but I don't see in functionality how it's any different from trying somebody in the same way. Now, another way to look at this is the poster violations, right? Somebody is tearing down a poster. As a CRO, I say, hey, don't do that. Stop it. Or they printed too many posters. What I can do is they printed too many posters. I give them a ruling. The ruling stands. If that happens again, I can either A, charge them for the same offense and charge them more and like give them punitive damages, whatever. Or I can have an entirely new offense and a new, you know, you've printed too many posters and a new ruling. So I at the base of this, I don't see how this is functionally different between what we have now and also what harms it gets rid of. So like that's kind of where I'm at right now. How does this change what we have right now, and what are the harms that we're mitigating? And I'm sorry if this has come back like right back to the start, but I'm still a bit lost on it.
Thank you very much, Vice President Hanwell. We will go to Councillor Singh.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I agree with Mr. Khan, but what if some really strong evidence comes out afterwards and we can't change the ruling that makes SU look wrong? So it's the judicial system looks wrong on it. So maybe we should have some conditions with this. I don't know what kind of conditions, but like maybe we should think of something else too, so that we can still do it again with some of the conditions, I guess. Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Councillor Singh. We'll go to Vice President Rahman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And actually, just like to take this on, I'm really enjoying this debate. I don't think we've had this lively a debate before. Going back to my comments on the motion on the floor, I don't think that some of my concerns were addressed, particularly around, like, if you have an infraction being ruled upon and then new evidence coming forward for that exact same infraction. Like, the reason that this is really important to me is because I don't think that this motion is making it fair for the common student. Let's say you're a student who is paying attention loosely to the elections, not in detail, but you plan to vote. And on the very first Thursday of campaigning, someone gets accused. Dagor meets on Friday, makes a ruling, and then the following Monday, a title comes out in the gateway that says, candidate Smith deemed not guilty of cheating, or whatever it is. And then you're a student who said, you know, I saw candidate Smith doing that. I think that I should fill out a complaint form to the CRO and let them know that, like, I think that this happened. And so if, like, a ruling is already made, and then you're saying we're not going to touch this ruling ever again, then it does make it unfair for students who didn't know that when the Dagor meeting is. Because it's true, the Dagor meetings are open to the public, but I don't think that like we send out an email to every single student saying, hey, come out to this Dagor. It's not like we make a Facebook event, encourage students to come. We just invite people who are like required to be at that meeting. So it would be the three chickens for the meeting, the complainant and the candidate who's being complained against. And so I don't think that that's really open to all candidates, and I'm not sure if you guys are paying attention to it or not. But that's my biggest concern, that this isn't being fair to all students on campus, to anybody who wants to file a complaint at any given time. And so that's why I'm leaning towards voting against it, but I'd love to hear your concerns. And I'm more than happy to motion for extra speaking terms for people to address this.
Mr. Speaker?
Yes.
Parliamentary inquiry?
Yes.
Can I make a motion to suspend standing orders right now?
Yes, okay. You can.
I so move.
So I'm going to assume that motion was to suspend standing orders to allow for more than two speaking turns on
that is correct.
Particular motion. Is there a seconder for that motion? I saw Councillor Flanagan stand up. So I believe this motion is not debatable, non-amendable, and requires a two-thirds majority. So we'll go to our handy-dandy voting system.
Point of parliamentary inquiry.
Yes.
Should we specify a limit to how many extra speaking, or just unlimited?
At this point, just because unlimited was not specified by Councillor Tronson, I'm just going to say unlimited.
someone wishes to set a limit later on, you can certainly do so. So, again, we'll go to the voting system. So, to be clear, a vote plus would mean that you would like people, like members of council, to have more speaking turns. A vote minus would be you'd like members of council to only have two. And a vote of zero would be an abstention. Is everyone clear on what all those mean? Any councillors need a refresher on what abstentions are? Don't be shy. This is the right time to ask. Councillor Stephen. Okay, so an abstention just basically usually occurs in a few instances. One famous governance individual's words, there are basically three reasons why you should abstain. I'm adding on a fourth because we're at an academic institution, and because I know Vice President Rahman would just yell it out if I didn't say it. So, basically you should abstain in two instances. You should abstain because there's a conflict of interest, or because you just simply don't have enough information to make a decision either in favor or against. So conflict of interest is basically four characteristic words, because we're the Students' Union: blood, money, sex, or grades. So if you are in some way related to whatever is being ruled upon, there's a conflict of interest, so abstain. Money, if there's a monetary relationship, so for example, for a nominating committee, if Councillor Kevin Wong was to vote in favor of a particular individual who he was an employee of or was an employer of, he should probably abstain from that vote. Sex, I think, is pretty self-explanatory. We won't go into that. And grades, if there's some enhancement of your grades or some detraction of your grades for a particular way in which you vote, you should just abstain and just mitigate that whole risk. Does that make sense? Clear as mud? Cool, cool, cool. All right, so we will go to a vote using our handy-dandy voting system. So voting will begin now. Please vote. So the voting system will close in 3, 2, 1. So that motion carries with 17 in favor, 12 opposed, and 2 abstentions. So members of Students' Council now have unlimited speaking turns. Yes.
Doesn't it require 2/3?
That is right. That is correct. So that vote does fail. That's correct, Vice President Bonnarchuk. Thank you for pointing that out. Maths are hard at this point in time, so... yep, so that vote actually fails. So we will not suspend standing orders to allow for additional speaking turns. Instead, what we will do is we will abide by standing orders, and we will actually go to a 15-minute recess. So we'll recess until 8:20, because really, I need to use the bathroom, and I feel like some informal discussion is probably required on this motion. So we'll recess until 8:20 p.m.
Yo, I gotta go home.
Okay.
I'm so tired.
No, it's okay. It's okay.